Once upon a time, in a galaxy far, far away, Jaesu and Keisu interviewed some pretty cool people. Here's one of those interviews now.
All right, Jaesu and Agent Daryl, we're still here at Fan Expo in Toronto, and we're very honored to be standing here at the booth of one of the stardust around, Ty Templeton. So, Daryl, you have some questions for Mr. Templeton?
Yeah, well, actually, first of all, I wanted to say, Mr. Templeton, congratulations on your nomination for a Schuster Award for webcomic creator, Buntoons. Is it a weekly strip about comic industry foibles? Is that a good way of...
It's a weekly strip about whatever entertains me that week. So it's because I'm in the comic industry, it's about the comic industry a lot.
But everybody would know.
If that week I'm having trouble with my next door neighbor, that might show up.
I know that problem.
It's whatever is in my brain that makes me laugh on Saturday morning. The rule of the game is that when I started doing it, it was whatever I think of Saturday morning when I wake up is what goes on the bun too, and I do not touch pencil to paper before Saturday. So I often surprise myself on what I come up with because I don't know until I wake up. I sometimes go to bed with an idea, but I never execute it until I wake up.
Okay, and let it percolate overnight.
No, the point of it is to force creativity out of myself without a net. Without any chance to go back and fix it or to do it twice at my job I'm working on comics all day long, and so it's an opportunity to create comics that I don't owe them to anybody, I don't owe a specific joke to anyone, I don't want anyone telling me how to make it funnier, I don't want anybody telling me, oh, don't do that subject today, I don't want you talking about, like, this week I'm likely to go after that idiot in Kentucky that won't issue licenses.
Well, the U.S. Marshal's already got her, so.
But there's still things to be said about her. And I don't know yet exactly what I'm specifically going to do. I just kind of know that's a subject that's interesting me this week. But it's Friday night. Tonight, when I get home, something might occur to me, and I go, no, subject changed. I'm going to do that.
Something you see today.
Or it might be something that happens in the next 20 minutes. Or it might be something that when I wake up.
It might be about me.
It might be about this conversation right now. It might be about whatever happens to me, and that's the point of it, is it's my space to be creative without a net.
Very cool. So now we were talking to you earlier about Howard the Duck, and you were talking about how it's kind of hard to read when somebody takes over. But what I was wondering was, Chip Zdarsky is a prominent, well-known, I guess, Canadian, well, up-and-coming, I suppose, Canadian artist and writer.
All Canadians are up, and we're off-and-coming.
Very, very well put. Very well put.
But you thought that was a dirty joke. I placed that on you. There was nothing dirty about
your mind
that
went there, not ours.
Yeah. But, my words, your mind.
I was going to say, do you think that as Canadians, Canadian writers such as yourself and Chip Zdarsky, do you think that because we are as close to America, immersed in their culture and yet apart and separate from it, that it's easier for us to be, for a writer like yourself, to have that satirical eye towards American culture?
That long question gets this answer. Yes.
Yeah. I did all the heavy lifting for you.
You did all the heavy lifting? Because, yeah, that's exactly it.
I figured that would be what your answer was.
The reason Canadians are able to mock American culture as well as we do, and we do it quite well.
And they get their digs on us too, right, eh?
No, they don't. They get their digs in on what they think our culture is, but none of them know our culture well enough to make fun of it.
Almost nobody I know says, hey.
Yeah, exactly. The only people that ever got our culture well was on How I Met Your Mother, because the woman who played Robin on that show is Canadian.
Yep.
And
yes.
So there was a part on one of the episodes where she collects Harvey's takeout
trays. Harvey's trays, yes.
And I went, holy crap, those are real Harvey's trays.
Real,
and
they were the orange trays, yeah.
Even knows what a Harvey's is. So I actually enjoyed that.
They probably mishear it as Arby's or something,
right.
Probably.
Yeah, because they actually got Canadianness of that right.
But in general, likely because they had Canadian writers on the staff.
Exactly. But in general, Americans just don't understand us well enough to make fun of us. So
it's all takeoff hoser and A.
Which of course they got from a pair of Canadians, Dave Thomas and Rick Moran.
Exactly. Igloos and hockey sticks and drinking beer and back bacon.
The great Canadian white. They don't really make fun of us properly because they don't know us well enough.
But because American culture is so ubiquitous.
Well, yeah, I mean, American culture is common to everybody on Earth. It's not just us.
Any writer outside of America can look with a satirical eye at America.
A British person, a French Canadian, a German person can do it. Pretty well anybody but a Swede.
But do you think Canadians have that edge because we're so close? Because we're on
the edge?
No, I
don't think our proximity matters because everybody gets American culture. Honest to goodness, I'm sure the Australians have a great time sending up the American. And they're as far as you can get.
Oh, they get a lot of it, too. I mean, and in pretty much the same way, too. The same stereotypes. It's almost racist, really. I mean.
Right, but I'm sure they wake up in the morning and go, oh, let's make fun of Donald Trump tonight, because they get to see him on TV just as much as we do. No, it's pretty easy to make fun of Donald Trump. Say his first name and his last name, and you have a complete joke. Donald Trump! There you go. Laughs the plenty.
Now, Daryl and I have been big fans of yours for a long time. I've been following you since your Justice League days. Daryl, I know you go back a long ways, too.
Well, at least as far as Howard the Duck from 7 years ago, for sure.
Yeah, way more recent than Justice League.
Yeah. Well, I'm a few years younger than Jay here, so.
A little bit.
That's my excuse.
Do you have a project you're most proud of?
Of my entire 30-year career?
Of your entire career, yeah.
Whoa.
Open-ended question, I guess.
Wow. The Children.
Oh, that's
there you go.
A good answer.
Your greatest creation.
Yeah, my greatest creation. I'd like to think I haven't done it yet, but
building up to your magnum opus?
Yeah. If I have to pick the comic book that I felt I was most me on, was a series from Marvel Comics in the late 80s, early 90s called Mad Dog.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of it?
I have heard of it, yeah.
Wow. The premise...
Surprised I haven't, actually. I'm the Marvel zombie.
Well, it's not a Marvel comic. Marvel published it, but it wasn't a Marvel comic.
What it was
Bob Newhart had a sitcom where he played a comic book artist named Bob McKay. And I watched the first episode of the sitcom, and on the sitcom they were creating a character called Mad Dog. He was a superhero artist who created a comic book called Mad Dog. And on the show, you'd see samples of the artwork of the character, and I went, I want to do that. I want to make the comic book that they're pretending to make.
Wow. So it's almost like fanfic for a TV show.
Exactly. And so what happened was, I called up an editor at Marvel, and I said, you know, the sitcom that went on the air with Bob Newhart, I love Bob Newhart, and you guys, you should publish the Mad Dog comic book. Like, I was telling them to purchase the license from CBS so I could do it. And I literally did.
You know, it's coming back. I think I do remember Mad Dog. Did he have the ears?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm starting to remember.
And so I called up an editor at Marvel, and I literally went, I don't know how much it's going to cost you, but you guys are going to buy this license so I can do this comic book for you. And the editor went, hey, that's not a bad idea. And they literally went out and got the license because I told them to. This is a bizarre way to get a job. And so for the next 6 months, I had, and I actually finished the last issue, I said, thank you, everybody. This has been the most fun I've ever had wearing pants. And it was. And then I put in little brackets, let's be honest, issue 4 did not include pants. And it was just, they let me do this comic book. The TV show didn't stop me. The editors at Marvel didn't stop me. I just got to do whatever I wanted. And for 6 months, I just did whatever I wanted. And
doing the classic early version of it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so one of the things I did very quickly in the stories, he has a kid assistant named, I gave him a kid assistant. It wasn't in the original series, but I wanted him to have it. And I named the kid assistant after the dog I had as a child. So I had a dog named Murphy, so the kid assistant was Murphy the Wonder Boy. And in issue 3, Murphy the Wonder Boy is captured by an evil German woman named Lillian Hundmutter, which is the German word for bitch, which they let me do because nobody there knew it.
But it works because it's dog humor.
Right.
And it's contextual.
Lillian Hundmutter transforms Murphy into a werewolf, and and he gets cured at the end of the issue. But for the rest of the series, thank you so much, for the rest of the series, every time Murphy meets a new character, he drops to his knees and sniffs him in the ass. And... The editors at Marvel didn't stop that. And
this is the Comics Code Authority days, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. As soon as I got away with that, I started going, what else can I get away with? And so I started coming up with characters that I just went, they'll stop me. They will stop me. And they never did. I had a character in it named Femininja, and Femininja's entire personality was she just carried around a big sword going, I'll cut them off! And that's all. That was her catchphrase.
Oh, wow.
Is, I'll cut them off, or let's stick it to the man. And those were her two catchphrases.
Okay, and they're pretty really innocuous if you don't...
No, it was pretty obvious it was a castration joke. And I had a character named Bloodstream, whose superpower was that he could shoot blood out of his fingers at fire hose capacities. And after the first time he displayed his powers was the first time an editor started to go, no, wait, no. Because in his first appearance, he's fighting someone in this room that's fairly small, and by panel four, they're up to their knees in blood. Because it doesn't go away. He just shoots it out of his fingers, and they start getting kind of physically sick because they're waiting around in blood. And so the next issue, when I had a Bloodstream scene, the editor goes, let's not do more Bloodstream. We find this kind of disgusting. So the Bloodstream character is about to attack somebody, and police come in and arrest him for breaking civic codes because he leaves blood wherever he goes. So he actually gets arrested. He's not allowed to use his power. And so month after month, they just let me do what I wanted. So my big finale for the series was that the character had been slowly losing his mind and getting angry and angry and beating people up. And you find out in issue six, it's because he's lactose intolerant. And he's been having a celebratory milkshake every time he catches a bad guy. And the celebratory milkshake was mixing with his mutant powers, not just making him fart and burp a lot, but it was also making him violent. So he has to cut out milkshakes in the last episode, and he joins this lactose intolerance league, and he's starting to promote lactose intolerance awareness. And the editors are letting me do this.
You're laying down.
And so, by the time the six issues was over, I just went, thank you guys, that was the romp of my life. You never, and in fact, the editor who never interrupted me except for that one time with Bloodstream, because I was lettering the book too, I was doing everything on it, I eventually started giving the editor a different credit than editor, and he started getting the credit benign neglect. Or issue four was benign neglect, issue five was, because his name was Fabian Nicieza.
I know him well, yeah.
Fabian Nicieza, he read this too. That was his credit in issue five. It's Fabian Nicieza, he read this too.
And you know what? Thank you. You just pronounced his name, and it's like the first time I've ever heard somebody actually who knows him pronounce his name. I get fans who try to pronounce his name for me all the time.
Well, that's it.
And it was actually a running gag pretty much throughout the 90s. So,
do you know how to pronounce the guy, the true Electra assassin? Starts with an S.
You're the Electric fan.
I don't want to attempt it.
It's the name that's spelled Sinkiewicz. Do you know how it's actually pronounced? Sinkiewicz. It's the easiest name in the world to pronounce the minute you hear it. But it's always Sankiewicz or something to people.
Is it Nicieza?
Nicieza.
Nicieza. Okay,
go.
Excellent. Now I'm going to commit it to memory because I've been trying for 20 years to figure out how it's pronounced.
Fabian's my favorite editor ever because Fabian just let me do what I wanted.
He is a fantastic guy. I was a big fan of his Thunderbolts run.
Month after month, I would go, I'm going to get this. Oh, the cover for issue 4. You should look this up online. The cover for Mad Dog number 4 was literally my attempt to have it pulled. So it is a shot of Mad Dog on all fours with a dog leash around him. And there's this woman wearing high heels that's forcing his head into a dog food dish. And it just says, Mad Dog's most, and then in big letters, humiliating adventure ever. And he's just having his head forced into a dog food dish. It's clearly sexual fetishism on the cover. And I sent that in going, you'll stop me from this. You will stop me. Nothing. He did not stop me.
You got it through.
So the next issue I had on the cover was Mad Dog holding up a certificate that said that you were not allowed to purchase this comic book until you signed a waiver in case you have a heart attack and die from the excitement inside it that you will indemnify Marvel Comics.
Like they used to do in the movies in the 50s.
Right. And so I had this, and it was printed on the cover, and it's Mad Dog going, stop! Before you buy this issue, you must sign this medical certificate. And I tried to have Marvel make it that retail retailers would not allow you to buy it until you actually signed the cover.
Wow. That would be
no
awesome.
No retailers are willing to do that. The cover actually went out that way. It says stop.
Nightmare for CGC nowadays.
And it got to the point that for a couple of years after Mad Dog, I'd get handed copies to sign, and I wouldn't sign that copy unless you signed it first.
Nice.
That was my rule. I would not sign a copy of issue 4 unless you did the signature first.
That's awesome.
Because the problem was, I can't be sure you wouldn't die from excitement.
We appreciate your time. We don't want to take up any more of it, but...
This was supposed to be a two-minute interview, and you turned it into a 7-minute
interview. Well, you asked me my favorite gig, and that was my favorite gig. But, I mean, my other favorite gig is I loved writing The Avengers. I absolutely loved working on Spider-Man. I loved working on Batman 66. I love the gig I have this week. This week I'm working on an Evil Dead comic. I'm having the greatest time of my life. So, it's... Well, I didn't say anything other than I'm working on one. I'm not saying anything beyond that. It's not
working
out
on
yet.
A lot of stuff too.
You're right. It's
doesn't
not
mean
out yet.
Gonna,
so anyway.
The enemy's going to see it.
And so, you know, I love my job and I love what I'm doing this week as much as I ever do.
So you live in the moment, really.
That one I just kept going. You let me do the lactose intolerance hero.
That's awesome. Now, did Dan Slott use the character later on?
Mad Dog?
Mad Dog.
The character belonged to CBS, not Marvel.
Yeah.
Because it belonged to the television show.
It seems to. Maybe I'm thinking of a different character, but.
No.
Maybe, no?
Dan Slott and I get mistaken.
I'm going to look it up.
Because we work together a lot.
You've piqued my interest, for sure.
But the character belonged to the CBS television show. And I did it. That was part of my deal, was that I got to talk to Bob Newhart on the phone.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty cool.
Here's the thing. I demanded this job, and then I had conditions on top of it. It was pretty stupid.
Did you talk at all together?
I believe that he does. I believe he does.
My name is Daryl, and you can imagine my feelings of Bob Newhart growing up in the 80s.
You have a brother?
I have many brothers named Larry and Daryl at this point. Yeah. I've shared that joke with many.
I'm a huge fan of Bob Newhart. I've literally been a fan of his since Button Down Mind, like since I was like 9.
And his appearances on Big Bang Theory most recently have been...
Yeah, they've been nice. Yeah.
Great. It's nice.
Jedis? What the hell?
Yeah.
Hey, I mean... He's age appropriate for the role.
Sure.
So yeah, we'll wrap it up. Thanks so much, Ty. It's been great talking to you. And a special credit to Jeff Isherwood for his peanut gallery comments there.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. To hear more We Got the Geek, check us out at www.wegotthegeek.com and on iTunes.